I'll be taking less than 50 minutes.
Okay.
We're on? Good. So, welcome back to U of T. For most of you, it must be second year. So, I hope second year will be as productive or better than the first. I have a lot to say, lots and lots and lots of technicalities, and they're all on the two-page handout that you may already hold, and also on the class website. But you see, if I start the course with technicalities, you know, it's just no fun. So I'd rather start with some sort of like splash scene, you know, or you know how these movies start with a kind of action scene. And then it starts with the normal character development and all that, and gets back to the action later on. So we'll do the splash today, okay? But before that, a few words that I must say. So this is MAT-267. If you're in the wrong classroom, you may leave. Advanced Ordinary Differential Equations. The instructor is Dror Bar Natan. This is me. But correct pronunciation is not a part of your course requirement. Requirements. Call me whichever way you want. My coordinates are here. The teaching assistant is Jordan Bell, and he's sitting here behind the video camera. The video camera is here because of Tuesdays. So my understanding is that there are clashes. People are having clashes on Tuesdays.
Monday.
What?
It's on Monday.
Today is Monday, I know. No, yeah, but the clash is on Tuesday, isn't it?
No, it's on Monday.
It's on Monday? It's now?
Yeah.
Oh, well, anyway, it's being videotaped. Sorry, my understanding was that there was a clash with some physics class on Tuesdays. Okay, so it's Mondays. Anyway, so as a partial, or not partial, as the only remedy that will be offered, all classes will be videotaped. Now, I warn you, I really, really, really warn you, do not, you know, use the videotapes more than you have to. If you get into the habit of avoiding, of skipping classes, even when you can come, counting on the videos being available, you may be hurt. Okay, so I really urge you to avoid that. And if you look at the handout that you may have picked up on the way in, you'll find that there is like three paragraphs of warnings. Read them carefully, I mean it. Okay? This said, I think, there is lots more to say, but I think I would rather say all of these things, so go over this handout that you have, tomorrow rather than today. Okay? And today, I want to actually start with mathematics. So let's get this out of the way. And, you know, I'll start with a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of statements, but then we'll move on to the real action. Okay? So, first of all, what is a differential equation? So, what is a differential equation? So it's an equation in which the unknown, these are not quite high quality chalks, in which the unknown, rather than being a number in, you know, equations that you've seen in algebra before, or a collection of numbers, or a vector, which is essentially a collection of numbers, so in which the unknown is a function, and you are given, and we are
given some relation between that function and its derivatives are all evaluated at the same point. All evaluated at the same point. So I could give a more formal definition, but I think I'd rather, this is definitely not a formal definition, okay? But I think I'd rather give a few examples and rather than formalize it even further. So examples. So I don't know what's the first differential equation I can think of. So y prime is equal to y. So what does it mean? So implicitly, I am saying here that y is a function, okay? And y prime is the derivative of this function, evaluated at some point. Y is the function, evaluated at the same point. And that point is any point on the real line if I didn't say otherwise. I may say otherwise, okay? So really, this is the same, you know, this is exactly the same as writing for every x, so the point on the real line, you know, if nothing else is stated that I'm using the name y, will usually be assumed to be called x. So the function y is a function of a variable x. Though sometimes it will be t or something else, depending on our mood, but you know, usually it will be clear from the context or explicitly stated. So this is the same as saying, I am looking for a function f, such that for every f, for every x, the derivative of x at the point, the derivative of f at the point x is equal to f of x. This is an extremely difficult differential equation, and I'm sure none of you have ever seen the solution. So what's the solution?
Yes.
Oh, so I was wrong. Okay, so it's e to the x. Okay, so I mean, you know, we start easy. So y is equal to e to the x, except not quite. It could be just as well 7 times e to the x. So in this particular case, the equation does not determine the function. So I mean, more precisely, y could be any constant times e to the x. And the equation, rather than determining a single function, determines a whole family of functions. One for each value of this constant c. It could be 7, it could be 9, or whatever, any other prime you want. Sorry, I'm just kidding. Not necessarily prime, not necessarily an integer, okay? How do you fix which constant it is? So usually differential equations come with some extra conditions. So it may come with something called an initial condition. And the initial condition, say for this equation, could have been y of 0 is equal to my favorite number, 22 over 7. One of my favorite numbers, okay? So then what would the solution be? So the solution, so now this fixes the solution, solution to be, so which constant is it that at 0 will give us 22 over 7. So let's substitute into the general solution x is equal to 0. If when x is equal to 0, e to the x is equal to 1, so the constant c must be 22 over 7 itself. Okay? So therefore, the solution will be y of x is equal to 22 over 7 e to the x. And this will be the pattern, right? We will write an equation, typically harder than this. We will find that it has many solutions, but these many solutions will depend on a parameter, okay, on some constant C. Or sometimes it will be two constants or three constants, depending on the equation. We'll see later what the conditions are. But and then we will fix these constants by being given or by thinking, depending on the situation, of some further conditions that might have been given to us. Okay, let's do a couple more examples and then move on to the actual action for today. Okay, so example number two, here's a harder equation. Y prime is equal to y plus e to the x. Any idea? So it's not very hard, right? But part of the point is this class is that if you don't have an idea, then by the end of this class, you should have an idea, yeah?
X times e to the x?
Yes. So by guessing, or maybe by brilliance, we could figure out that the solution is, that a solution is, y is equal to x times e to the x. Is this the most general solution?
I think that's a constant, right?
No, I could not add a constant. If I add a constant,
Well, I mean, multiply
then the left hand side will not change, but the right hand side will change.
No, I mean multiply by constant, sorry.
If I multiply by a constant, then you know what? Let's try. What will happen? So
if you multiply by a constant, there won't be x.
Right, then this part will break. Basically, this and this. So if we multiply this solution by 7, then these two terms will be multiplied by 7, but this one will not. So the solution, so it will not work. So this is, you know, so I'll just leave it here, okay? So we just found a special solution. And let me ask you, are there more? So, you know, a few hours from now we will know the answer. Okay, next. So, you know, these were still easy. Things could get harder. So, you know, an equation could be as complicated as, I don't know, y multiplied by e to the y minus y prime squared divided by the cosine of x plus y prime, I don't know why I chose this for no reason whatsoever, is equal to y second derivative. I never said first derivative, right? So the first two examples involved only the first derivative, but I said the function and its derivative, so I did allow myself to look at higher derivatives. So what's the solution of this one? Solution? Oh, you're right, zero solves it. okay. Sorry, you know, I just wanted it to be a random equation, okay? And I wasn't sufficiently random. Solution? So, the answer is that I have no clue, okay? The answer is that, you know, just like very often integrals you can write, so you can write something like the integral of log of x over x, okay? But it doesn't mean that you can find what it is, okay? It doesn't mean that you can actually find a function whose derivative will be this. So likewise with differential equations. So often we will not be able to say, oh, here is the solution, here's a formula for the solution, but instead we will only be able to say a solution exists. So we will prove a theorem at some point saying that under reasonable conditions, a solution always exists, just like under reasonable conditions, an integral always exists. And in fact, often the equation will serve as the definition of the function which solves it. In fact, possibly the best definition of the function e to the x is it is that function which satisfies the differential equation y prime is equal to y. If you think about it, the most significant property of the function e to the x is the fact that its derivative is equal to itself. So we could have used this equation as the definition of e to the x. And likewise, we could say this equation is the definition of some function whose existence I can prove and whose properties I could study, even though I cannot write a formula for it. Now, why would I want to do that? Why would I want to look for a function y with this which satisfies this equation? Well, I don't know. This is a random equation. I don't want to look for a function that satisfies this equation. It's not interesting. But the point is that there will be many examples where the equations we will write will lead to interesting functions. Useful functions, functions with useful properties. And maybe I'll start with the first example. So the first real example. Are you still with me? Okay. So let me give you an example for a problem whose unknown is a function. So this problem is called the Grapistocron problem, and it goes as follows. You have two points, A and B, and you're looking to design a ski slope that will start at A and end at B. Okay? And we're assuming that there is no friction whatsoever, and we're looking to design that ski slope for which if a skier starts here, sorry, my artistic talents are limited, so this is the skier. So if a skier starts here, she will get to the end point as quickly as possible. Okay? So what is the unknown here is not a number, but a shape. Or in other words, a function, the graph of a function. Is the problem clear? Is it clear what the skier wants to do, or rather what the designer of the slope wants to do? The skier starts here, wants to get here as quickly as possible. What's the best shape for a ski slope to do that? Okay? So let's try to think. So, you know, I could have equally well gone that way, right? This is clearly inferior to the shape that I wrote. Because what happens is that the skier will start very, 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 very slow, will spend most of her time very, very slow, and then all of a sudden will go very quickly, but only after having wasted lots and lots of time. Okay? I could have also designed a slope that goes like that. Okay, or chosen a slope that goes this way. The skier will reach a very high speed very, very quickly. You know, I'm ignoring physical injuries, etc. Okay, it's an idealized problem. So the skier will reach a very high speed very, very quickly, but will leave itself too much to go, and therefore will reach the end relatively slowly, or after a relatively long time. So where is the balance? What exactly is the shape that will get us from A to B in the fastest possible way? So let me draw it the way I've drawn it, because what I've drawn is approximately right. So you kind of start with a high slope to gain speed and then cover the horizontal distance and try to actually solve the problem. Maybe before solving the problem, a bit about the history of the problem. If I remember correctly, it was asked by Bernoulli sometime in the 1500s, 1600s. Anybody remembers?
It was in the late 1600s.
Late 1600s, thank you. And sort of there's a very, very famous incident about it. Well, it was solved by several people. Apparently, it's not so hard, okay? But one of these people was Newton, and Newton published the solution anonymously, and then there is a famous quote of Bernoulli, I think, who said that he recognizes the lion by his paw. So he just by looking at the solution, he knew it was Newton. So let's do what Newton did, you know, but much faster. Okay, so actually I don't know if faster, I mean, but today, okay. So the whole fun here will be to derive the equation. It will take us some effort to derive the equation. Once we've derived the equation, solving it will become sort of the topic of the rest of this class. In a way, all I'm trying to tell you now is that differential equations are interesting. We get to them from natural places. So, first of all, the first observation is that when the skier is at a certain depth below the point A, you know what, let me choose a coordinate system in which the point A is called zero, and I measure the depth, I call the depth y, and I measure it downwards. Okay? So when the skier reaches when the skier goes down to depth y, she has lost a certain amount of potential energy, and she must have gained the exact same amount of kinetic energy by conservation of energy. So, and kinetic energy is just a function of her velocity, of her speed. So, the speed at depth y is fixed. The velocity at depth y is fixed. It's something. Let's figure out what it is. Okay? So, by conservation of energy, the kinetic energy loss, which is m times g times y, must be equal to the gain of kinetic energy. Kinetic energy is 1/2 m v squared, and therefore we must have this equality. And this is the key to solving this problem. Now, if you have not seen physics or elementary mechanics before, actually, I very much hope that most of you have seen at least that much mechanics, okay? But if you have not seen this that much mechanics before, then take this as an axiom. Take this as a given, okay? This is what determines the velocity as a function of the depth, okay? Now, but now I can be a little bit more precise. So let's cancel the m, let's move the 2 to the other side, and take the square root, and we will find that the velocity as a function of the depth is equal to the square root of t2 times g times y. Okay? Well, okay, I got something. Now, what does it give me? So, to get something useful out of it, I need to know a completely different principle from a completely different branch of physics. And it's called Fermat's principle. And it looks completely unrelated, and that's part of the beauty of this problem, that it puts together things that appear unrelated. So Fermat's principle from optics says that when light travels from A to B, from two points, between two points, it picks the shortest possible route. So the way it is stated, it is actually slightly imprecise, but it's not important for our purposes. Also, I'm kind of completely not telling you why or how can light pick the shortest possible route. Okay, how does light know? And that's a beautiful thing in its own, but, sorry, not the shortest possible route. What I wanted to say, the quickest route. Not the shortest, but the quickest route. Is this the comment? Thank you. So how does the light knows? Well, that's again a story on its own, which is worth telling, but not today. Let's take it now as a fact. And rather than proving it or anything like that, I'll give you an example. So example, and only after the example, we'll go back to the problem we had at hand. So the example is so-called Snell's law of optics. Okay? So again, how many of you have seen Snell's law? Okay, but not everybody. So let me tell you what Snell's law says. It says the following, or let me give you the simplest example. So suppose you have, suppose the point A is here, the point B is here, and we want to travel from A to B, and there are two types of material separated by some, by some plane in between A and B. So maybe this could be air and this could be water, okay? Or maybe this would be air and this would be glass. Okay, so if you want to study optics, often this will be air and this will be glass, or it will be two different types of glass. The point is that light travels at different speeds. So you know the famous statement that the speed of light is constant is about the speed of light in vacuum. But light actually travels at different speeds within different materials. So the speed of light in this material might be V1, and the speed of light in this material might be V2. So suppose V1 is more than V2, then how would light travel from A to B? Well, it makes sense for light to spend more time in air than in water, because it wants to reach from A to B in the fastest possible way. Okay, so what light will do is it will go this way. It will go this way. Okay, it will spend more time in air than in water. Now, clearly it will go on a straight line while it's on air, because in air the speed of light is always the same, and then the quickest is the same as the shortest, and the shortest way to get from here to here is along a straight line. Likewise, from here to here, it will go along a straight line. However, the overall path will not be a straight line, and that's why light breaks when it hits lens, for example. Okay? But how much does it break? So this is Snell's law. Snell's law says the following. Well, if you draw the normal to this surface, to the interface surface between the two material, and you write the angle between this straight line and the normal, and you call it alpha 1, and you write this angle similarly at the bottom, so let's write this angle and call it alpha 2, then Snell's law says that the sine of alpha 1 divided by the sine of alpha 2 is equal to the speed at the top divided by the speed at the bottom. Okay? Now, how would you derive this law? So I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to do it right now. But it's something that you could have derived last year when you took calculus. Because basically, it's a one-variable minimization problem, right? You could have put a coordinate system along this axis and call this point x, or call a point along this line x. Then, no color chalk. No. Then you could have computed the time to go from A to X, and then computed the time to go from X to B, simply by writing, you know, figuring out this distance using Pythagoras' law and dividing by the speed, and then figuring out this distance by Pythagoras' law and dividing by V2, the speed down in water. Okay? So you get a function which for every x tells you the time to go from A to B via x. And then you want the minimum of this function. This is a single variable minimization problem. You can solve it. You can write the function, differentiate it, solve the minimization problem. You'll find an equation for x. And when you stare at this equation long enough, you'll realize that it is this equation. You'll find that it is this equation. Okay? So again, I'm not doing it because in principle it is something that you could have done last year. Let me rewrite it and then tell you why it's relevant. So let me just rewrite it very, very briefly. So let me divide by sine alpha 1, so it will go here, and multiply by V2, so it will go here, and I'll have that this is the same as V1 divided by sine alpha 1 is equal to V2 divided by sine alpha 2. This is the exact same equation. I didn't do anything. The only reason, in fact, I should have written this one to start with. The only reason I wrote this one is because people who have seen Snell's law before might have seen it in this form. This is the more familiar version of the law. But this is precisely equivalent. Good. Now, who cares? Who cares? Who cares? I don't know. Anybody knows? So, again, my problem is to go from A to B. And what I know is that the velocity is equal to square root of dgy. And instead of a skier, let me pretend to be a beam of light. Okay? So I could design a material for which the velocity at depth y, so again, y is measured from here, so for which the velocity of light at depth y would be the square root of 2gy. So, you know, the image I have in mind is various alcoholic drinks, right, which are sort of layered. You know, when you go from the bottom to the top, you see, more and more of the... I'm not an expert. I don't understand in alcoholic drinks. But, you know, you see more and more of the alcohol or of the whatever. And therefore, the speed of light in such alcoholic drinks will be proportional, or not proportional, will be some function of the depth. Okay? Or, you know, to be more politically correct, or more, I don't know, academically correct, I could take two types of glass in which the velocity is slightly different and mix them with various proportions, and so that I'll have mostly the slow glass at the top and mostly the quick glass at the bottom. And then as I go deeper and deeper, the velocity of light as a function of the depth will be square root of 2gy. Okay? So now my question is, well, sorry, the picture is exactly the same, but the question is, but now this is the path of some light beam. Okay. Okay. Now, sort of the next, there are several clever things along the way, and here's the next. So, now let's look at this equation. What does this equation really say? You see, V1 divided by sine of alpha 1 is happening completely in air. It's the velocity in air divided by the angle to the normal, or rather the sine of the angle to the normal in air. V2 divided by sine alpha 2 is completely in water. Okay? It's the velocity in water divided by the sine of the angle to the normal in water. So really what this said, so by the way, suppose there was a third piece of material. So suppose we had, you know, a picture like this. Okay, where the velocity was V1 here, V2 here, V3 here. And suppose we measured the angle to the normal here and it was alpha 1, the angle to the normal here and it was alpha 2, and the angle to the normal here and it was alpha 3. Notice that it doesn't matter if I measure the angle to the normal sort of above the above or below, because this angle is the same as that one. Okay? So by Snell's law at the top, I would have V1 divided by sine alpha 1 is equal to V2 divided by sine alpha 2. By Snell's law here, I would have that this is the same as V3 divided by sine alpha 3. And then by transitivity of equality, if this is equal to this and this is equal and this is equal to that, I have that this is equal to that. Or said differently, V divided by sine alpha, so the velocity divided by the sine of the angle with the normal is constant. It's always the same. It's the same here and here and here. Are you with me? So now, in a similar manner, let's pretend that we split this domain into many, many small ones, and in each one, compute the velocity divided by the sine of the angle to the normal. It will always be the same. So the moral is that if I write a vertical line anywhere here, the vertical line is the normal to the interface between the speedy glass below and the slower glass above. Okay? So if I write the normal at a vertical line at any point, and if I write the tangent at any point, the tangent is what determines this angle. And if I put alpha over here, then, well, and if the velocity of light at this point is V, then I have that V divided by sine of alpha is equal to a constant. Okay? Or said differently, well, I already figured out what V is. So, square root of 2gy divided by sine of alpha is equal to a constant.
Are you still with me? Is it okay? Yeah?
Doesn't the solution assume that the function is differentiable?
Oh yeah, I'm assuming that the function is differentiable. You know, this is class number one. It's not, you know, I'm not pretending to be absolutely, totally rigorous. Okay, I'm trying to derive a differential equation. I will make all the assumptions that will help me, so long as it's...
Did you make that assumption?
What?
I'm just wondering if you didn't make that assumption.
I did not state it explicitly.
Newton.
Oh, did Newton? Oh, I'm sure he did, yes. Okay. You know, I'm not sure Newton was even aware that non-differentiable functions existed. The non-differentiable functions actually came a lot later. The sort of complexity of calculus, the whole thing about continuity and epsilons and deltas, came in the late 19th century, maybe 200 years after Newton. Anyway, but you see, we're almost done, in fact. Because, you see, sine of alpha is determined by the slope of the tangent. And the slope of the tangent is a function of the derivative of our unknown function. Okay? So in principle, what I have here is some function of the derivative, something that can be written in terms of the derivative. And what I have is an equation that involves the function and its derivative, and that's a differential equation. So let's just work it out. Let's just go all the way through it and figure out what the equation is. Now, in other words, let's be precise. What does the derivative measure? I think the derivative is the tangent of some angle, right? The tangent of the angle between the horizontal and the tangent. Am I right? You have a function. What's the derivative of the function? Anybody remember? Is it something like...
we use delta epsilon.
Like 10 over alpha or something?
I'm pretty sure, the derivative of a function is the tangents of this angle between the tangent and the horizontal. Right? Because tangents is delta y divided by delta x, and that's exactly what the derivative is. Right? The tangent is this distance divided by this distance, and that's exactly what the derivative measures in the limit, infinitesimally. Okay? So the angle I care about, unfortunately, is not, or the angle that the derivative is about, unfortunately, is not alpha, but rather the angle with the horizontal, namely beta. By the way, notice that I'm measuring y downwards. So this beta is a positive number, it's not a negative number. I'm measuring downwards. Okay? So what I know is that y prime is equal to the tangents of beta. And now I have a little challenge in trigonometry to figure out sine of alpha, given that the tangents of beta is equal to y prime. So first of all, so let's do that. So sine of alpha, how is alpha related to beta? So alpha plus a right angle plus beta is 180 degrees. Okay? Or if you want, pi radians. Okay? So beta is 180 minus 90 minus alpha, or alpha is 90 minus beta. So sine of alpha is equal to the sine of 90 minus beta, Yeah, you know, I'm not allowed to use degrees. Okay, but this is, you know, I'm in second year. I can do, you know, I can switch between degrees in radians at will, so I will. Okay. So this is equal to cosine of beta. And now I need a little bit of trigonometric cleverness. So trig cleverness. And it's the following. It's actually easier to start from the tangent side. And let me just derive it. There is a famous formula. 1 over cosine squared of beta is equal to, so just write 1 as sine squared beta plus cosine squared of beta divided by cosine squared of beta. And then divide both numerator and denominator by cosine squared, or rather carry out this division. So sine squared divided by cosine squared is tangent squared of beta. And cosine squared divided by cosine squared is 1. So the moral is that 1 over cosine squared beta is equal to 1 plus tangent squared of beta. So therefore, let me put it here. So cosine squared of beta is equal to 1 over 1 plus tangent squared of beta. Take the square root, and you find that cosine of beta is 1 over the square root of 1 plus tangent square of beta. And the reason I'm happy is because the tangents of beta is y prime. So this is equal to 1 over the square root of 1 plus y prime squared. Okay? And therefore, the differential equation that I need to solve is, so I need to solve square root of 2gy, square root of 2gy divided by the sine of alpha, which I've just derived to be this, so divided by 1 over square root of 1 plus y prime squared is equal to a constant. So this is a bit silly, right? I have 1 over 1 over, so I'll flip this over and I'll get square root of 2gy times square root of 1 plus y prime squared is equal to a constant c. And now, let me square both sides. So I have c squared, and I get rid of the square roots. Okay? And then, let me divide by 2g. So 2g disappears from here and goes to here. And this whole quantity is a single constant. Okay? So let's just give it a new name. Okay, it's a constant, it doesn't matter what I call it. So let me erase it and call it D. And this is the differential equation I need to solve. Okay? Now, unfortunately, we run out of time. So we will have to continue next time. But the moral for today was that we started from a question about nature, in which the unknown was a function, was a shape. And this is a completely standard thing. It happens repeatedly, and it will happen to us again. Or it will happen to us in other places. You know, if you want another example where an unknown is a function, just 1 minute. Hang a bell between two things, what shape does it make? The unknown here is again a function. In fact, you know, in the majority, in so many places around you, the unknown is a function rather than a single number. And very often, you will find that the unknown function will have to satisfy some differential equation, such as this one. And I guess the first thing tomorrow will be to solve this differential equation and figure out what is the answer to our original scalar problem. Yes, what's the question?
What happened to the G?
Oh, I've put it into the new constant. G is a constant. See what the constant do, too. So I just call the combination of constants that I have here, G. Okay. So tomorrow we will also talk about all the administrative stuff.